This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends, and Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to the road trip episode. So I'm currently sat in a very nice little Airbnb in Roppenheim. We left, so when I say we, there was a change of a handover of people. Joe and Roger, also known as B-Roll, they joined me for the first part of the trip. So I met them at the Eurotunnel. They came with me to Bastogne and to Foy, and then on to the Nürburgring, and then spent 4 or 5 days at the Nürburgring. And then yesterday they shot off and they went home, and I was joined by Nathan. Nathan's been on the show before. So if you've looked at the So You Want to Be in Formula One episodes previously, that's Nathan. And Nathan is an Alpine Formula One mechanic, also just a really lovely guy. So he joined me, and then we headed off after one more lap of the ring yesterday. This morning got up and then came down to Stuttgart to spend some time at the museum, and I wanted to take my car back, my little Outlaw Cayman 2015 Porsche Cayman, and I wanted to park it outside the factory, get the iconic pictures, and take it back to its birthplace pretty much. So I'm going to pick it up from there. The museum's great. I'm going to talk about that next week. But the most random thing happened ever, and I've mentioned this before, my Cayman, the sort of build, if you want to call it that, the modifications I'm doing to my car really aren't particularly extravagant, but what they're trying to do are is give a sort of Sonderwunsch or exclusive manufacturer take, my version of a take on that. So I thought what would be quite fun is to take a photo of my car outside the Sonderwunsch exclusive manufacturer building that is in Stuttgart, in Zuffenhausen. So I drove around, found where that was, parked outside, set the camera up, just about to do a piece to camera, mic's on, everything's going. Nathan sat in his car about 10 meters away, sort of just being patient, watching me, before I got absolutely jumped on by security guards, which is not massively surprising. I still managed to squeeze a bit in there, so I don't know what's going to be usable and what's not, but that's not the funny bit. As I was getting turfed off, and I did was polite and put all my stuff away and left, I saw a car leave. Now, I didn't think anything of it. I'm sure there's people coming and going to that place all the time. Parked up around the corner to get some petrol to head to Roppenheim, because it's about an hour from Zuffenhausen. And this guy gets out of the car and comes over to me and says, "Hi." And I think, okay, hello, lovely, polite German person, this is nice. And then realize he's not German at all. I think he's either Canadian or American. And asked me a couple of questions about what I was doing outside that building. And I explained about engineering, explained about the REM 550. His eyes lit up, which was I wasn't expecting. And then he said, "I am the designer of the Boxster. And I designed the Boxster concept that you saw in the museum. I've been working for Porsche since 1989. I think at that point, my mouth just dropped open like a 5-year-old with its first transformer. And Yeah, I think I was like, no way, you are joking. And then he looked down at the wheels on my car. So if you haven't been over to the Instagram page, at Rengineering UK on Instagram, and at Outlaw Cayman on Instagram is the kind of nicer pictures of my car, the sort of more curated account. He looked down at the wheels, which are 718 GTS 4-litre wheels, all basically the same as the Boxster Spider wheels from the 981 generation, same wheel. He turns around and goes, I also designed your wheels. And my my brain is absolutely nuked at this point. So, I mean, that is the most random thing ever. Got chatting a bit more. We got on like a house on fire. He handed me his business card and said, please come back and I will show you around. So there you go. Sometimes serendipity kicks in, random things happen, and you just be a good person, smile, or in my case, just have a childish grin on my face all the time when I'm around Porsche stuff, and weird things happen. But I thought, rather than try and talk about that next week, because I will mention it next week, but I'll kind of do a trip breakdown in total. But I just wanted to leave you with that anyway. So I'm going to hand over to me and a mate I've known for 25 years, massive petrol head. And as I said, Joe came on this trip with me. So here's a waffle between me and Joe. I'll catch you back at the end.
That was a slap. Slap to the face.
Slap to the face. Slap to the ears. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 44. This is a waffle episode, and it is a special edition because it's coming to you live from Germany at the Nürburgring in the GT3 hotel. I'm not on my own this time, which is nice. I'm with Roger, who's not mic'd up, but he's in the background. Hello, Roger.
Hello.
Hello. And a friend of mine that I've known for 25 years, I think, and that is Joe. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you for having me. Right, although then. I thought it was going to be special because I was here, not because of where we were. But
yeah. No, it's your collateral.
Don't win them all. Don't win them all.
So this episode then, and what I want to talk about a little bit is the trip, because I think we're 3 days in. We've had a pretty good time. But as I've spoken to you guys off the podcast already, there's a bit of a process to this. You, the listeners, will know, the viewers, if they've watched any of the Heritage episodes or Tech Talks, and head over to YouTube now and go and do that, at Rengineering on YouTube. But I always start with someone's youth. So it's quite interesting because there's going to be probably slightly differing views of what Joe's youth was like. So I'm going to ask Joe, but Roger, if you hear bullshit halfway through and you're like, that's rubbish, then feel free to chip in. And you mentioned it when we were in the Alibaba in Adeno yesterday about your earliest car memories, but I'm notorious for not having a particularly good memory. So if I take you back, replay a little bit, but in your words, where did that start, mate?
I got two, actually. I suddenly thought of another one last night. I can't remember whether or not I had a car in my hand, which was when my sister was born. I was taken to the hospital. And I think he bought me a toy car to go in with. My dad, that's obviously, you can't hear him.
Is this placating the young Joe that could have thrown a tantrum because a younger daughter was coming along? Or was it just,
it's probably to satisfy me, give me something to, there's something new and shiny for us, so there's something new and shiny for you.
Yeah.
I've got a recollection of a toy car walking down the hospital corridor. But the main one is we used to go swimming in a local swim pool in Chepstow. On a Sunday, we go for a swim. He'd make me swim lengths, which was annoying. And then we come out and we sit in the bar and normally have a packet of crisps and a drink. And there was a little telly in the corner of the room. It must have been, like a 15-inch telly CRT back in the day, as it was. And they'd have the Formula One on every Sunday. And I just remember that image of looking up and thinking, wow, they're going fast.
What year was this?
80s. It would have been the 80s, Most likely mid to late 80s. Okay. So 86, 87, somewhere around there, I thought. It's probably my earliest car memories anyway.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
So that's car memories, but there's a difference between memories of a car and the kind of the ignition of like a passion. But I know that there's been a bit of a car journey for you because I've been there for some of it.
Yeah.
Seen some of that. We'll get onto some of those highlights and lowlights. What was the... Because I don't even know... I'm asking questions because you don't do this with friends, right? You don't sit down and go, So, tell me about your first car, but I am genuinely interested. So, what was the first car?
Well, we'll get it. The first car was, I got my parents' Nissan Sunny to cruise around in after I passed my driving test. I think my dad knows the story, if he can hear this, that we ditched it in the woods pretty much the first day I passed my test. Bent all the front valance up, and there was two or three of us that got it back out, and we were pulling the valance back out because everything was made of steel back then. There's no plastics or anything like
B-roll
that.
B-roll Roger, are you, what was this? By the way, Roger's got a nickname for the trip called B-roll Roger, because you will see if you head over to the YouTube channel at some point when this video goes live, that Roger's been a bit of a rock star really, and kind of directing us and saying, right, I'm going to run ahead and you guys can walk towards me and things like that. So any of that B-roll you see of me and Joe or me, the credit goes to Roger for that. But yeah.
So yes, that was my first car that I got after passing my test. And then after that, I think the first car I bought was a Vauxhall Nova. 1.2 Merit in brown.
There's something we've got in common, because my first car was OVV869Y, and that was a 1 litre Nova in brown.
Yeah.
I don't know about, because they did a couple of different browns. Mine was the absolute shit colour.
Mine was like a goldy brown.
Okay.
Brown.
I do know that one.
It wasn't completely brown, but it was pretty brown. And it was so basic that it didn't have a passenger side wing mirror.
Nice.
So we went up to, you'd know it, the place just outside Cheltenham, name's gone out of my head now, Harry Buckland's.
Yes.
And went in there with a screwdriver, because back then you could go into the scrapyard and just get whatever you wanted and come back out and pay for it. So I walked back out with a wing mirror in your pocket and a screw. So I just need this.
2p for the screw and a wing mirror. It looked like you're packing a truncheon.
So that was my first modification to a car. That was a passenger wing mirror on a 1.2 Merit.
Mm. Any wheels? Anything? Did you put a Pico big bore on it? I mean, again, for listeners that aren't in the UK, this won't mean anything to you, but in the 90s, a Pico big bore on a Nova was the de rigueur of modifications. So was there anything else or not?
I don't know if I put a big bore. I might have done. I can't remember on the exhaust front, to be fair. I don't think I've got any photos of that car. Might do somewhere buried, because it was obviously film back then, so don't know. I definitely put a racing stripe on it.
Was this electrical tape on a racing stripe?
No. My friend's dad owned a vinyl company.
Yes, so, of course he was.
So it's actually properly vinyled out. You know, it was good. It was a good job. The stickers we got done when we had the cars back in the day, because my mate's dad owned that vinyl company for lorries, was actually pretty good.
Because Luke had a pink Nova at one point, right?
I think so, yeah. James had one of the Ali G Renault 5s for a bit.
Yes.
Me and my mates have had all sorts. But no, the Nova, we put the sticker on it. I'm pretty sure I drilled the airbox, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
With a wood drill. You know, massive holes in the bottom of the airbox to make it sound like it had induction. What are the modifications I did? I think that's probably everything I did to that car, to be fair. I don't think I did
anything stereo.
Else to it. No, probably not back then. Would have had the cash for it. That's hence I drilled the airbox.
And what can I do that's free? Well, I can rob some stickers off a mate. I can get a drill bit. That's about where it gets to.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's an interesting thing, because that those first cars, I mean, I crashed mine in about 6 months into a minibus full of girls, but that's a story for another time. But they kind of, they're not the, I know what I'm doing. They're the, I'm going to try anything. I think, and I would never share this with anybody, I don't think, the car I had after the Nova, which was a 205 XS, starting a kind of Peugeot theme for me after that, it was a standard air filter, but I think someone had donated some K&N oil, and I thought it would be a really good idea to impregnate a standard air filter with the oil that you get from a K&N, thinking it would be... What actually happened is it sucked all that oil straight into the carb and blocked the carb up. So the car never ran after that. Well, it did, but not very well.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's the sort of stuff you do as a kid, right?
So. Yeah. It's the only thing you've got to do, because you can't afford to do stuff. You know, back then I would have been, 17, 18?
Yeah.
No real free cash lying around at the time.
No, of course not.
So it was whatever you could get your hands on to do it cheap.
So. But this is interesting because if I think about, you would have been 20, I'd have been 19 when we first started working together, but it wasn't that long after that, and I'm sure there's probably a couple of cars in between, that you had a magazine-featured car. So things escalated pretty quickly.
Yeah, there was only one car in between, which was I had a company car, which is a terrible thing to give to an 18-year-old. So literally, I had the Nova for about 6 months, and then I got a job, and they said, here's a company car and a fuel card.
I went, that's a disaster thing to do.
Is there a limit on this? And he went, nah, carry on. So we went everywhere. It's a Vauxhall Astra 1.6 GLS in white. Mark III Astra, I think it was, okay. The boaty handling one. It wasn't great. I mean, it made progress. And we modified that, a company car. I put DTM upswept exhausts on it, more vinyl because we did, you know, the sun visor, the massive sun visor.
Yeah. So it's like a faux touring car kind of thing that was going on in your head.
Yeah.
In your head, not in real life. But
and I mean, that car suffered some serious abuse. I've never abused a car like that before. Mm. We took it to, back then there was a car cruise down at Weston-super-Mare.
Yeah.
On a bank holiday Sunday. And we got out of the car and left it in first gear idling speed where it would just crawl along on its own.
Yeah, sure.
And walked alongside it down the middle of the car cruise with nobody in the car. That's probably from watching too much Knight Rider as a kid. Everybody thought it was hilarious.
Of course,
you
know,
stupid things you do. If it had clipped anything and the steering wheel had turned, it would have been a whole headache of pain if it had driven into somebody.
But you don't think of that stuff, do you, when you were a kid?
No. We did it in the car park. We put it on full lock and it did the same thing. If you had it on full lock, it would stay on full lock and it would just do circles in the car park on its own with nobody in it. Just daft stuff like that we did to this car. Blew the engine up. Vauxhall rebuilt it because it was a company car, so it just got rebuilt.
It's a warranty, yeah.
And then after that, it was never the same. Every time I filled it up with petrol, I had to fill it up with oil.
Okay.
And then they told me, and this was the thing, it was about 2 years I had that car. They said, oh, you can have a car allowance in your own car. I went, what?
Ooh.
I said, yeah, we'll give you like, I don't know, 150, 200 quid. I can't remember what the amount was back then.
But this is the 90s, right? That's probably equivalent to 400, 500
quid. Late 90s, yeah. Late 90s. And I was like, so I can just buy anything I want with this. He went, yeah. So I went out and bought my white Peugeot 306 XSI.
Right, I'm going to pause there because, listeners, if you were that keen, you can go and hunt out. Do you remember what month and year it was featured?
I think it was June. I can't remember what year it was.
It would have been like 2000 or 2001, wouldn't it?
I think it would have been 2000. Don't think it was 99. Yeah. I think it was something like June 2000. Yeah. I've still got copies of the magazine somewhere.
So when I do an Instagram post about this episode going live, I'm going to try and get Joe to send me a picture of this car and you can see it for yourself. Now, looking back, it was flawed in a few areas. Having said that, at the time, I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. You could have been Dom Toretto at that point for me. So I was, it was styling wise, it was perfect. The stance, again, this is like this, so a 306, if you're listening to this then at that point, especially the, so nerdy we got into Peugeots, but I think it was like the phase two, isn't it? You had a phase one, which is the bumpers, but with a black trim around it. And then they changed and it was kind of much smoother. The starts, because the torsion bar had been lowered and the front springs had been, I don't know whether they were cut or they were kind of on proper
shocks. I can't remember what brand they were, but
but it was low and it properly looked like a mix of a Peugeot touring car and something from Fast and the Furious, but it didn't look disastrous. The only thing that I was like, was the speaker build sub box.
it was a bit janky MDF build.
Yeah,
back then,
I mean, it was standard 90s stuff too, right? You went down to B&Q and you bought a shit ton of MDF and you cut it into shapes and that was your speakers.
And most people, to be fair, went to car companies and had proper installs done. Me and a mate did that.
Exactly.
So it wasn't like a pro install. I mean, to be fair, for a lot of the work, there were some we went to a garage for bits, but for the most part, most of the work was me and a mate having a go at it.
And it was amazing. And I guarantee that experience that you had with a mate doing it was almost as valuable as the enjoyment of having a car and then seeing it in a magazine and kind of...
Well, it definitely didn't financially work out, that's for certain.
Yeah.
But no modified car does.
So before we get on to like the end and the impact of that car... we've got a joint story that I've never talked about on the podcast before, but Joe is a handy driver, as we found out today and yesterday, because he did a relatively quick lap around a wet ring and managed to get it sideways and kind of got it back on track. Having said that, that wasn't your crowning glory for a driving moment, Joe.
No, I remember. I know which moment you're on about.
Yeah.
We went down the... Was there nitrous on it then?
Yes, it was. Yeah, that was the whole point of this, Joe.
Yeah. I think I put the 75 brake jets in.
75 brake jets.
We went down the road, turned around, and we're coming back.
Towards the motorsport company that had helped Vettel the car, right?
There was a slight straight, and obviously I'd imagine a lot of listeners would probably appreciate this, is that a slight straight when you're 19, 20 years old in a car... is
gap,
an overtaking
man.
Space.
That's a gap.
Whereas in reality, even now in a very seriously powerful car,
yeah.
I wouldn't even dream of overtaking in that spot today because it's just daft. But dickhead here went for the overtake. And as I did, the car came around the corner in the opposite direction. So I had to somehow swerve in from the overtake whilst trying to make the apex of a corner, and I couldn't slow down. I couldn't do anything much, and it was just all a bit of a muddle.
It was fully committed at that point.
It was committed.
Brake, massive crash.
Yeah. Turn early, massive crash.
Massive crash. Or not make it because you just head-on crash, right? Yeah. The likelihood of getting out of that situation with anything other than a massive crash was...
The only gap that was there, I think, was the one we found.
Yeah. We were full Harry Potter night bus territory at that point.
I mean, in reality, you think about the speed we were probably doing, it was probably 65, 70. It wasn't ludicrous speeds, but it'd been fast enough to where
it would have been. Yeah, it would.
Certainly with the car coming the other way, it would have.
So I think we pulled over quite shortly after that and both had a bit of a shaky hand moment before going back.
That was the only time I spun that car, another time as well. And that one, to be fair, I wasn't going, as far as I know, it wasn't going too fast. I came around a sweeping left-hander. And I lifted halfway through the corner. It was slightly damp. And I don't think I was carrying too much speed, whether it's something on the road or not, I don't know. I'd like to blame something else because that's not driver error then.
Yeah.
The back came round and I was looking at the car coming the opposite direction out of the driver's side side window, thinking, this is going to hurt. And then it snapped back at me and threw me the other direction.
Which is what happened and how I killed my MR2. Exactly the same thing.
So I missed the oncoming car. Luckily, there was enough space. I didn't hit anything at all. Pulled over on the road, just down the road, and smoked about 3 cigarettes on the bounce. So yeah, that car was a lucky car in some regards.
It was. How did it die? Because it didn't die, but you, again, this is the point where I think, and if you're listening to this and you're of a certain age, chances are you'd have been through the same process. Very basic modifications with no money, a little bit of money, basic modifications. A little bit more money, a little bit more experience, and a lot of ego and desire to do something different, and a big effort on a modification.
Yeah.
And that big effort was...
Living at home with your parents. In hindsight, I should have bought a house, but you know, you live at home with your parents, you spend all your money on a car and going to the pub. But no, I was coming down a hill, not going fast, to be honest. I just downshifted for a corner on the left, and a piston let go. So yeah, just the plume of smoke out the back. The car behind me must have thought, what the hell has just happened?
Yeah,
because they wouldn't have been able to see a damn thing because it was that bad. It let proper white smoke everywhere,
right?
It just dumped, I think, the entire oil straight through the engine and burns it. It couldn't see a damn thing out the back. Oh, you could hear it let go, so you know when you know it's mechanical.
Did you even try and start it at that point?
No, it just coasted down the hill. Put it into neutral and coasted down the hill, got it recovered. So yeah, it was dead. And then we tried a few things. We tried putting a 2-litre turbo engine into it. Didn't have the expertise to get the wiring done in a way
it was doable. It wasn't going to happen the way it was.
I'd run out of money at that point pretty much and trying to do it yourself. I had one wiring loom in one hand, one wiring loom in the other hand. I probably even got a photo of that actually somewhere with stickers on them, little masking tape with writing on saying that's an indicator. Tried to identify what every wire was. Got so far and then just thought, no, just stick a 2-litre back in it. So we stuck a standard 2-litre back in it.
And then that was it. That sold, right?
Yeah, sold it shortly after that, yeah.
Yeah. And then went on to, because that hasn't stopped really, has it? It's been, how many cars have you had?
I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Exactly. That was what I was thinking, is we could go through the ones I remember and add in a few more, but I think it's probably worth doing highlights rather than...
I can't remember if I got... I think I got the 205s after that. I think that's when I started getting 205 GTIs.
I remember you having a Supra.
Ah, sorry. No, yeah, when I did have, yeah. That's
and
good reminder me.
Turbo.
Yeah, I did, yeah. So I had the R5 Turbo and the Supra at the same time I had the 306.
Did you?
Yeah, briefly. I think all three of them may have been there at one point. I've definitely got a picture of the 306.
I love the way that this is working out. So couldn't afford to fix the 306 really and go for it. But, hey, two more cars.
Yeah, but the 306 had some residual value because it was brand new when I bought it.
It was, yeah.
So it was a 2000 plate. Well, there you go. It must have been a 2000 with the max power because it was a 2000 plate car. It was a
there you go. W-Reg, W747 PWK. So,
exactly, yeah. Good memory.
I don't know where that came from, by the way.
It was exactly the plate. So yeah, then I had the Renault 5 Turbo. I can't remember what. I just ran that for a bit and sold it. It wasn't for me. It was difficult to drive. Everything was heavy. You know, I was commuting to Cheltenham at the time, so I had a 50-mile round trip commute every day.
Yeah.
No power steering, no brake. It was just heavy to drive on and difficult. So that didn't hang around. I got a Supra for a bit, Mark III, I think, Supra.
Yeah, it would have been Mark III.
Because it looked like Kit from Knight Rider.
Yeah.
3-litre normally aspirated auto.
And I still waft cringe wagon. At this, but I tried to do a Knight Rider style slide over the bonnet and failed miserably.
Yeah.
And effectively, listener, jumped on the bonnet of Joe's poor Supra and then put a massive dent in it.
Luckily, it wasn't a valuable car. I don't think I think I paid £1,000 for that at the
Did
time.
You?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. It wasn't expensive, I don't think. Yeah, so sold that. Then I think actually I got a grey 205. That's the first one. I don't know if you saw that one. I don't know how long I had the grey one for.
I don't know.
It was a 1.9 GTI.
Yeah, no, that
didn't have it for long for some reason. I don't know why.
No, the one I remember you had a black.
Yeah, black, so the black 1.6 was the next one.
Yeah.
Which I fitted twin 40 carburetors to.
That was nice.
It wasn't fast. It's like 115 horsepower, 120 horsepower.
But yeah.
It was 1.6, so it had the short range gearbox on it.
That was at the same time I had a 1.6 as well, because I had a...
Yeah, I got pictures of your steel grey. Is it
steel
grey?
Steel grey, yeah.
And my black one next to each other.
Yeah.
Because you had a Mini as well at the time, because I've got a picture of all three of them with those two in the Mini on your driveway.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I had that one for a bit. What did I have after that? Oh, then I went out and bought the MI16 converted red one.
Oh God, yeah. I completely forgot about that.
And then I bought a yellow McGann with somebody.
Yeah, so this would have been, I don't even know what, mid-2000s, maybe later than that, maybe late 2000s. Joe and I think it was probably my poor idea and I swept Joe along with the enthusiasm, but we decided to buy, or I found, a McGann, not even a desirable one. It was like an undesirable one in that yellow colour. And it would have been the same time a Clio 172 Phase 1 had come out. Mm. It was that sort of generation. So, yeah. And it had blown a head gasket. And the idea was, and you can tell already where their story's going to go, to buy it, do the head gasket on it. It was a pretty nice car. It would have cleaned up. In fact, it did clean up.
It
well.
Cleaned up lovely, yeah, because we spent ages cleaning
we
that
did.
Thing, yeah.
And then left it alone and didn't do anything with it at all. And I think it sat there for 6 months and there was
something probably
like
something like that, yeah.
And then we sold it for probably the same money we bought it from.
Pretty much, I think,
yeah.
So our attempt at being Matt Armstrong failed dismally.
That's it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't crash damaged, it was broken.
No, it was broken. But even so, yeah, you know, we were well ahead of the game in terms of the YouTube scene and failed miserably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should have had a camera.
Should have been.
Then I had the Legacy, I think, because my first daughter was born and I drove from where I was living at the time down to my parents' house with my daughter in the back. And as I went down the road, I just looked at the doors and thought, if somebody hits this, nobody's getting out of this car. It's a 205. The door's made of Kit Kat wrappers.
Yeah, they are.
So I was like, I'm not keen on having a child in this car. It's not safe. Sold that and went out and bought, I don't know what year it was, a 1998 Subaru Legacy.
Mm.
So back when it was the twin turbo, not the twin scroll. BG, so BG5. And that was a great car, you know, 2 litre, twin turbo, sort of STI
being...
derived a little bit. I had a lot of, when you got it on auction from Japan, and you never know what you're getting, it's a gamble. Turned
you actually ordered it from Japan?
So somebody did it for me locally,
Talk GT or something like that, similar sort of thing.
Yeah, similar sort of thing, yeah. So got it over and it turned up and he was like, I'll be honest, he said, I don't really want to let you have this. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we've agreed the price, we've got the car. He said, I've been under it, and everything's non-standard. It had pink SDI lateral links. It had white line stuff everywhere. It had been absolutely... The chassis had been absolutely breathed over, because you're not going to get massive power out of it.
No.
But somebody had spent loads of time setting the suspension up,
perfect.
And it drove brilliantly.
Right.
You know, it was absolutely on point for a big, long estate car, and I love a fast estate.
Yeah.
This thing just shifted. You know, it wasn't super fast. 330, I think, I had it on when I had it on the running road down at Surrey.
That's a decent wedge.
Yeah, I mean, it had been tuned a little bit. It had an Eiffel ECU and it had some other fandangled bits in the engine, but nothing, you know, no major engine work. It was just cosmetic-y air filter, exhaust, breathe mods, you know, sort of stage one.
But then that's
stuff.
Good because those are the modifications that aren't going to, you know, ruin the longevity of the drive.
No, I mean, I drove that car.
Drives brilliantly. It's got the right amount of power. It's, I think that for the most part, that's where people should stop.
Yeah.
Because you're not excessively modifying something so it becomes a one-trick pony and then you can't use it for anything other than a track day and then which is what, you know, I've been, you know, a victim of doing that before. So
it was a lovely daily, comfortable to drive, quick enough but not stupid. Not the best MPG, but flat engines never are. The turbo's up a little bit, but it's still a flat engine, but it just ticked every single box, you know, family duties, go on holiday in it. Took it, my first trip to the Nürburgring was in that car back in 2010.
Nice.
So I came over in that.
I bet that was a great car to drive over in, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite nice, quite comfortable to drive over in. It was back then when forums were a thing. You know, people didn't have Facebook and that sort of guff, so everybody was on forums. So there's a great community, uklegacy.com. Mm. There's a bunch of enthusiasts that were just into legacies,
right,
which are a bit more niche than the Impressas of the world.
Yeah. Longan? So Joe's username was Longan.
Yep, I was Longan on that.
Well?
Yeah,
you still Longan everywhere if you're on things or not?
Not as much these days. I don't tend to sign up stuff these days. Yeah. You know, just use email. That's the thing now. Yeah, you sign into your email for most stuff these days.
Yeah, fair.
Forums. The forum still exists. They're also on Facebook still. So, you know, I keep in touch with all those people as well. So,
they've ended up being friends.
Those guys still do ring trips pretty regularly. I might get over there one day with them, but I haven't been there too for that. It's just not fallen right for me, generally speaking, with them.
So what's been the, including cars we haven't talked about, but including cars we have, what's been the one that is the misty-eyed love child, if you could either keep it or go and get it again, wave magic wand and it was on your drive tomorrow morning, what would that be?
Good question. Probably
and in its perfect state, not in the kind of the ownership experience, the apex point that you own that car, what would that be?
Probably the silver E46 M3.
Okay.
And everybody's going to hate me for this, with the SMG.
Interesting.
Because I thought it added something to the car. A manual's great, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's something about the SMG that requires you to actually think when you drive it.
Yeah.
It's not like an automatic where you just get in and push the accelerator down. You have to lift when you shift if you want it to be smooth, otherwise it's jerky as hell.
Yeah.
You have to be careful on pull off. There's so many little nuances to that gearbox to make it, you have to drive to the gearbox.
Yeah.
And actually makes it quite an experience.
Yeah.
But then when you get it on a track and you really push it, it's a fantastic little box.
There's people going to be listening to this thinking about I can't remember which gearbox it is, but an air-cooled 911. Apologise to anyone listening to this, and there's like screaming at the whatever they're listening to it on. I don't know if it's a 915 gearbox or whatever gearbox it is, but there's a particular gearbox in an air-cooled 911, and you've got to do exactly the same thing. It's like a ponderous magic wand, and I drove one at Rennsport a couple of weeks back, and you do have to do the same thing. You accelerate, you lift off, clutch, change gear, wait a second, then you can carry on, and actually, I was talking to a few people and it's the engagement you have to have with that car that makes the experience so much better than the ones that are super reliable that you can flick in and out of the gears. I think that with a lot of cars is it's the bits that aren't quite perfect are the bits that you bond most with.
Yeah, it adds the character. Mm. It added the character. I mean, to be fair, the dream would obviously be a CSL. I think it's just, it ticks every box, you know.
Did you do the map? Is it a CSL mod or a map?
The gearbox had been mapped on that one, yeah. Okay. So it had CSL map. Yeah, I think it might have been a CSL gearbox map.
Yeah.
And it had an engine map as well. But I'd never got around to fit the carbon airbox I wanted, the Venturi airbox, which makes it sound like the CSL, because that's a stunning induction sound. It's just all engine.
Yeah.
No exhaust, it's all intake.
And I don't even think I'll have an exhaust.
The exhaust standard and just have that intake noise, because you just hear it in the cabin. It's all you need.
Absolutely. It's funny, have you heard that Chris Harris has been going on about saying exhausts are dead, don't bother doing exhaust, but go and buy ITVs, you know, it's all about induction noise from now on.
To be fair,
those things are so fucking loud that actually there's not much difference, I don't think, between an M3 E46 absolute flat chat and a decently loud exhaust. For me, they're both pretty loud, right?
So, yeah, they can be, yeah. You know, my first induction car was that 205 1.6 that I stuck 240s on. Yeah, that intake noise was just...
Do that again?
No, it doesn't sound like anything like the car. I'll find you a sound clip.
I have
a sound clip. I have a video of that filmed on my very first mobile phone. I think it's like... The video's useless. You can't see anything. It's about, 200 pixels by 200 pixels. It's useless.
Yeah, but we'll get the sound off it.
But the sound's on there. It's me doing an overtake and just going down the road a little bit. And it's
so for us, that's like in a week or two. For you, in fact, you can't... No, it'll be sooner than that. But for you, that's... Now,
yeah, I know where the sound clip is, so I can dig that out pretty quickly for you. To be fair, I was listening to it literally about a month ago. I found it and went, oh, what's that? It just said carb stop wave or something like that.
Yeah.
I know what that is.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, it just made a stunning sound. It's the fact I'm in gear, I play it back, and I'm like, you hear me go for the overtake, and you're like, you change gear in a minute, but you forget it's only 115 horsepower, so it's in third gear for what feels like an eternity because it never gets fast enough to get to fourth almost.
But it would be the E46. Silver,
yeah, that car just that would be just, the one just a blast. Yeah. You know, it's the right amount of usable power for the road. You know, 340 horsepower ish, I'd say, maybe a little bit less. Usable power. Mm. You know, no point is it overpowered. You know, my current car is just daft. You just can't use it. Whereas that was all usable power. Yeah. So yeah, it was. You just get in it, drive it, enjoy it. Did a track I did two track days in it. Might have done two track days in that one. In fact, that was the one whereby I ruined a brand new set of Cup 2s. Five laps in the Coombe, I span it.
Wow.
Flat spotted all four tyres. Luckily, stayed on the circuit, hence the flat spots. Yeah. Didn't hit anything. I parked next to the tyre wall. Completely wow. parallel, like I meant to parallel park it. It was awesome. Because yeah. I didn't hit anything. I was trying to chase
just an expensive mistake. But.
Yeah, so weirdly, I was chasing a friend who does Time Attack, Damien Bradley.
Mm.
And he's got a really fast Subaru Legacy. But he came to this event in one of his Imprezas. And obviously, he can drive. I mean, he's a seriously good driver.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he let us all overtake him with the intention of coming back past us all. And I'm like, you're not coming past me. And so, yeah, Billy Big Balls went into a corner too fast. And next thing I know, he just waved past me as I'm parked at the side of the track. Great, thanks.
So let's, before we get on to the trip, because we do need to talk about that, it's probably worth talking about what car you came in, because as listeners will know, I've been in my little outlaw Cayman, my 2.7981. It's been brilliant. But it's got, what, the 300 brake horsepower. Joe turned up in a...
F10 M5 with about 720 horsepower.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty.
That's been the sort of the word of the trip for your car. I think it's just
unusable.
Yeah,
I can't. It's too much power.
Traction control flashing in every gear.
Pretty much up to fourth.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, you turn it off and you can go into middle mode, MDM mode, which allows you a little bit, but you can't turn it off completely because you spin the wheels. It's, you know, the good thing with these modern BMW M's is almost all of them four-wheel drives. So you can use them. You can really, you know, you can take it to that power and actually use it to a degree on a track. But because it's a real-wheel drive, you just can't.
Yeah.
It's too much power.
It's a proper weapon, that car, as well, though.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what it can do on the Autobahn on the way back if I get a chance.
Yeah.
So we go near one. You can hit the Autobahn on the way out, weirdly.
In fact, you guys are, because you're leaving tomorrow, and this doesn't go out until tomorrow night. Again, I will add in now, what speed do I go up to?
200.
We'll wait and see.
I don't know. I don't know if it'll do it, and I don't know if I've got the balls to do it, to be honest. It's, you know, despite the fact that it's legal, it's still a road.
It's still a quick thing, isn't it?
It's still a lot of speed to do. So
in fact, one of the things we did do today, we bumped into a few people. Let's try and segue into the trip. To a guy with, I think it was an E63 AMG. Was it an E63?
Yeah.
And had done, and initially I was slightly questioning it, but he showed the video of his car doing 210 miles an hour on the automatic.
Yeah.
And I thought he was taking the piss to start with, or, you know, being a cocky little lad. But actually, no, he got the footage up on his phone and I was like, wow.
Yeah, fair play to
that him. That's
mighty
going.
Impressive.
Yeah.
It was even a slight corner as well. But the road wasn't quite straight, was it? It was ever so slightly turning to the right. And I'm thinking, I thought I could see the wheel just ever so slightly.
You were not coming out of that.
I was thinking, how light is that front end at that speed? It's not a car designed for flat out.
You know, the best bit about that whole story is the fact his girlfriend was fast asleep at the time.
Yeah, well, she was awake. She probably wouldn't like that too much.
No, maybe not. Nürburgring then. So, second time you've been here.
Yep.
Thoughts, takeaways? If someone was saying to you, should I go? What time of year? What would your hints and tips be? What have you kind of taken away from this trip?
Definitely go, first one.
Okay.
It's a heck of a place to come. Come later in the year when things are open if it's your first time. So you get the full experience, you know. We're here early in the season, so the diners are shut. You know, a lot of places are shut in the daytime or only opens on the weekends. So make sure you get a time when you can come and actually see the museum. You know, Devil's Diner wasn't open today, for example, which is the restaurant on site. You know, you need to go to experience those things. Pick a time of year that's maybe not snowing, because it's been snowing this week, which is crazy.
You know what? This is such a weird microclimate here. I don't even know if you can predict it in the summer. It can still flash flood or flash rain and stuff, so... But yes, it's more predictable later in the year. But then you've got the flip of that, which is tons of people here all the time. Places are booked out. You can't
balance,
just do last-minute trips because it's booked. Everything's booked.
Yeah, you got to plan. Track's going to be chaos any time of year. You know, even on we thought it was going to be a quiet Wednesday yesterday.
Yeah.
We went to the entrance thinking, we're here. There's barely anybody there. And then literally 10 minutes before the track opens, I reckon about 100 cars turned up.
Yeah.
And we're just queuing both ways up the road, every which direction out the car park.
Yeah.
It's suddenly like, oh. And so that first lap out, the first, I don't know, sixth, eighth of the lap was just rearview mirror. What's coming up fast now is another GT3. That was another GT3.
Well, when you're in a 700 brake horsepower BMW M5, you probably got a little bit more weight, you know, a little bit of an advantage because you can generally keep up.
I could keep up with them in a straight line if I wanted to. I just don't have A, the balls, and B, the skill.
Well, yeah, but a 300 brake horsepower Cayman, you can't do that. So for me, it was that. I think that's the thing, right, is to just not go out first opening of the session.
Yeah, no, hang back a little bit. Definitely hang back and wait half an hour, 45 minutes. Let everybody get out there, get their madness out, because everybody goes a bit crazy, I think, on the first lap. I mean, the first GT3 that came past me on that start finish, on the literally, you go under the bridge, and this GT3 came past it, a heck of a rate of knots.
Yeah.
I was like, where did he come from? I didn't even see him. And I'm minced coming out. But yeah, you know, straight line wise, I can keep up with those sorts of cars, but not in the corners. It's a 2-ton M5. It's not a sports car. Yeah. Let's be realistic about its use case here. It's great for wafting over, great for wafting back, and it can do a lap, and that's the main thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Ring's an incredible place to come and visit, though. Definitely recommend people do it.
Yeah.
If you're a car guy, when you're in the car park, it doesn't matter if you're in a Fiat or Ferrari, you're pretty much equal.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few people look down on you when you're in the car park, that car park.
Even with a mini van. A classic minivan. And that overtook you, right?
Yep.
On the wet lap.
On the wet lap, yeah.
You cannot, you know, if you come here, A, don't bring an ego. There's no time for that. No one's got time for that, because there will be faster drivers and faster cars. Come and enjoy it and just, and soak up the kind of the vibe that's here all year, you know, all year round, upon the close bits. But
well, if you don't want an ego, both my laps are over 10 minutes, so there you go. You can feel better about that.
I'm going to post my lap time, because it's probably measured in months, not
720 horsepower, and I still couldn't break 10 minutes. I broke 10 minutes in my Legacy 14 years ago. Okay. I'm pretty sure we did a 9 something in that, with literally half the horsepower. But more usable, usable.
And you probably owned it for longer. You knew the car pretty well.
And we did a few more laps. I can't remember how many laps we did, but I think we probably did 6 or 7 laps then. Okay. So we did a few more laps. Not that you know it anywhere near it, 6 or 7 laps.
Yeah.
Heck, even playing computer games before I came out here, I practiced on a set of Corsa before I came out here. Mm. It doesn't do justice to the compressions. The G you pull in, some of the dips really sucks cars, sucks you. It just takes your breath away a little bit as you come into it. The elevation changes are just phenomenal. I can't remember what the corner's called, but where you used to have a pit exit and you've got Eddie's Hotel, you come down into compression and then you go up and round to the right.
Mm-hmm.
You're G-ing into the face as you come up. You know, you're on the brakes, uphill, and the G's pushing the car into the ground. It's a phenomenal corner.
It is. I mean, I'll post bits of my lap. I'm probably not going to post this bit, but that was a girly squeal from me at that point. It was just like one of those moments where you're like, wow, it's... I think I used assault on the senses about 5 times when I was recording myself, and that's what it feels like. It's just all of your senses are activated at one time.
Yeah, because you've got to be aware of what's coming around you from every angle. You know, the stuff coming at you. You've got to be aware of what's going on in front of you. You need to know where you need to brake, where you need to turn, where you need to get on the throttle. Heck of a place.
Amazing place.
Yeah.
So let's. I want to wrap. Let me just do a quick check. Brilliant. Good timing. On a Porsche related story. So you've driven a 996 GT3, haven't you, Joe?
I have driven a 996 GT3.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, that's a good story. So you'll know because you were there.
Yeah.
For my wedding, I didn't like the idea of this thing where you hire a car and somebody drives you to the wedding. I thought, well, I like the American way, which is you have a car and you take yourself, you drive your bride away from the wedding with your fancy car. So I thought, well, screw it. It's wedding cars are expensive. I'm going to hire a car instead. So we went to hire a TVR T350.
Yep.
And TVR, it broke down 1 mile after we picked it up.
Yep.
So turned around, went back. And they said, oh, you can wait and we can get it fixed. They knew what it was, I reckon. I dropped the cylinder, so it's probably a plug or a lead or something like that. And we're like, well, not really. I need this for a wedding. I can't risk it not working on the day. And annoyingly, should have taken the Porsche that was there at the time, because I was a 993, I think, in the back of that
lot
at the time, in red. I've got a photo of it. We took the Aston Martin instead, the DB7, which is okay. It was a waft machine. It wasn't very fast.
It was a straight six, not a V12, right? So
Yeah, supercharged. So then we thought, well, let's stick on a pair of shoes and a shirt and let's go see if we can flag some test drives and some cars, because it looks like we got money.
Remind me, how old were you then?
24, 25.
So, dear listener, think of this. You've got a 23-year-old and a 24-year-old. I don't have a poker face even now. I definitely didn't at that age. And you've got two young lads driving around in an Aston Martin, pitching up to places to try and see if we can beg, borrow, or steal the car for a bit.
Yep. So we got a test drive in a GT3. I don't think Ferrari were open, or it's too far for us to go to Ferrari, which would have been, was it Dick Lovett out in Swindon,
Yeah.
We went to a TVR dealer to try to get a Cigaris, I think, or something like that, one of the craziest TVRs.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't let us because he didn't see his park. I don't know if it's because he didn't see his park.
So he just saw it.
Or actually, he called our bluff.
Yeah.
But any which way, I remember when we pulled out of the car park, the look on his face as he saw us drive past in the DB7, he was like, oh crap, have I just made a mistake?
Yeah.
He hadn't made a mistake, he made exactly the right decision. As it turns out, he didn't have any money. But he wasn't to know that at the time. But no, the GT3 RS, to this day, probably one of the best handling cars I've ever driven. From a front end perspective is how I'm going to refer to it.
Yeah.
You put that front end wherever you wanted, it went. Mm. It was phenomenal. I never pushed it hard enough to find out how deadly it was at the back when it let go,
but
the front end just was so pointy. It was a fantastic car.
When you dropped it back, I can't remember how that conversation, did you just drop it and go, thank you, and then handed the keys back and walked off, or
the story like that? I think I gave was that my dad had bought me the DB7, but I didn't like it. So I was
smirking away.
I was going to trade it in for something that I wanted instead, was the story I think I spanned the guys and the salesmen's, yeah. So apologies if any of them do ever end up listening to this.
I mean, like, they're not going to care at this point. It was Power Station, or what was Litchfield?
I think it was Litchfield, yeah. I think it was Kurt's
It was. So Kurt, I mean, the likelihood of Kurt listening to this is very low, but Kurt, if you're listening to this, you had a 996 GT3, if you remember, and two young idiots decided to try and take it out.
Yeah. Sorry,
and on
we're not
that
buying
note,
it.
on that bombshell, as Top Gear used to say, I think we're going to wrap for this episode.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Coming live from, or sort of live, from Roppenheim and in the Alsace region. Tomorrow off to Rants, and I keep saying Rants and then Reims, and it's just because you pronounce it Rants. I'm going to just pronounce it like that from now on, but everybody knows it as Reims. So that's the plan tomorrow, and then we're going to head off to Rouen after that. As I said, full trip breakdown next week. Hope you enjoyed the episode though. I hope you're doing well. I hope you've got a chance to get out and drive your car, spend some time with friends, or if you're like me, sometimes you just need that time on your own, you prioritise that and some self-care and self-love and get nerdy about cars. Apparently a childish grin is the way forward. So yeah, take care, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now. That's going on at the end.
That was a slap. Slap to the face.
Slap to the face, slap to the ears.